This is The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris Perry, and I'm on the road today in Worcester, Massachusetts. So I'm talking to you from my hotel room, but it's good to be with you. Now, a recent study by medical researchers at Cedars-Sinai finds that our eyes could hold powerful clues of a possible Alzheimer's disease diagnosis long before the first dementia symptoms appear. The study discovered distinct cells in the retinas of patients with mild brain impairment. And there's hope that these findings could someday lead to the use of retinal scans for early diagnosis of Alzheimer's. For now, though, there's no cure. Alzheimer's and other irreversible forms of dementia slowly steal away memories while keeping up the pretense that they're stealing away nothing at all. The fragmented memories and loss of self can leave caregivers with a deep sense of loneliness, grief, and sometimes even anger. More than 6 million people live with Alzheimer's dementia in the U.S., and the number is expected to rise to more than 13 million by the year 2050. And for each person diagnosed, there are many more affected: family, friends, community. In Travelers to Unimaginable Lands, Stories of Dementia, the Caregiver and the Human Brain, Dasha Kipper explores how our understanding of consciousness and self complicates the relationship between caregiver and patient. Help us to understand what dementia is.
Yes, oftentimes when we talk about dementia, we tend to use it as a way of describing a disease. But in actuality, dementia is a cluster of symptoms, be it memory loss or cognitive decline. But it's actually just a umbrella term. While Alzheimer's or Lewy body or FTD, those are the cause, and that's the actual disease.
Okay, so make that concrete for me. So when we say someone is experiencing dementia, I hear you saying that that means they might be experiencing it from a variety of different causes, but does it always present in a similar way?
No, it doesn't. Even Alzheimer's diseases don't present necessarily in a similar way, but dementia symptoms in general could be for different reasons. There could be because there are different diseases that are the cause, or it could be something like extreme dehydration that could give you dementia, and it's temporary.
So we're not here to think and talk about dementia in this kind of clinical sense for patients. The book that you've given us here is really thinking about the experience of dementia, not for those who are experiencing it, but for those of us who love them, who are in the role potentially of caregiver. Tell me what it was you're hoping to illuminate by thinking about dementia through the experience of caregivers.
Oh, gosh. You know, I really wanted to address a misconception that we have about dementia caregivers, and ultimately a misconception we have about the human mind. We like to think that the brain that's not working, the brain that's impaired due to reasons like Alzheimer's disease, well, we expect that brain to be compromised. We expect that there's memory loss, that there's judgment impairment. We expect that they might lose their sense of control. They might become volatile. But when we look at the caregiver, what we expect is somebody who's dealing with losses and dealing with grief. But what I found is something that is actually much more interesting is happening. They're dealing with something that is actually affecting their brain. When I would get calls from desperate caregivers, most people thought that I would be getting calls because they're dealing with an abundant amount of sadness. But actually, the reason they called is they would tell me, everybody told me that my husband would be losing his mind. Nobody told me I would be losing my mind. Not only do I not recognize my husband, I can't recognize myself. And what they mean by that is they're behaving in ways that are irrational. They're behaving in ways that they know they shouldn't, like arguing back with somebody who can't abide by reality, and they're behaving in ways that they betray what they feel is just common sense and common decency. And what happens is that I see them going into a shame spiral after seeing that they behave this way. And clinically, it's my job, and as a person, it's my job to normalize that behavior. One thing I always say to them is, you're far from alone. Nobody deals with this disease graciously. I wanted to give caregivers a context. Well, why is it that I'm seeing everybody behave a certain way? Why is it that caregivers begin to mirror the symptoms of dementia patients? Why is it that they're behaving in ways that betrays their better judgment time in and time again, even though conceptually they know better?
This experience of thinking that it will be sad, certainly there is sadness and grief, but there's also this anger, this frustration, this difficulty in even, as you said, sort of even beginning to wrap your mind around what it is you're experiencing and how. Can you talk a bit here about the kind of Cartesian mind-body problem? Because I think it will feel familiar to so many beloved caregivers. How is that connected to this mind-body issue?
That's a very good question. So the mind-body question, to put it very crudely, is that for ages, there have been a lot of philosophical contention. Is the mind simply the workings of the brain, or is the mind something else? So of course, Descartes believed that there's more to the mind than the workings, the mechanical neural workings of the brain. And these big philosophical issues suddenly make their way into the homes, into the living rooms and kitchens of caregivers. How? Because caregivers are constantly told, stop arguing with your mother. It's her brain. It's not her. And caregivers know this. And that's why they feel so ashamed, because they're like, I know something is going on with her brain. So they conceptually understand this. And people from the outside don't quite understand, why is the caregiver acting so irrationally? They know there is a brain impairment, but the idea is that they're expecting the healthy brain to act rationally. And our mind is not designed to act rationally. We have bigger imperatives, and that is to seek connection. And the reason it's so hard not to treat our loved one's mind as a faulty brain is because, as the psychologist Paul Bloom explains, all of us, regardless of what we intellectually believe, whatever side of the argument that we land on, all of us are secret philosophers because we hold an unconscious intuition that there is a separation between mind and brain, that people are more than just their brain. So intellectually, you could understand, oh, my mom has a disease. And her brain is making her act this way. But once you're in the room and your mom is provoking you and she's pushing your buttons, all bets are off. You're now back to seeing her as a mind. And what do minds do? Well, minds are willful. Minds know what they're doing. Brains don't, but minds do. And so even though certain kinds of advice hurled at caregivers seems simple and intuitive and understandable. You know, it's the brain. It's not your mom. It's the brain. It's not your husband. But it's not that simple, because there are unconscious biases that our brain has that allows us to communicate with other people. And dementia disorders, they take that away, and they leave caregivers oftentimes as disoriented, as angry, and as volatile as the people they're caring for.
I wonder if it's particularly true when the person that you're caring for in this context is an adult who's been really competent their whole lives. Like, you know, when you care for your infant,
yeah,
it's not that you never feel frustration, but you expect an infant to not be able to feed themselves, right? You're not surprised about that. But when the parent who's fed you, right, your whole life, now can't make a meal, or the spouse who was your intellectual partner and bestie now can't do so many of the things we think of as part of adult competence. I wonder if it's particularly hard for our minds and brains to compute what we're experiencing as caregivers.
Absolutely. It's the fact that we have a history with these, with our family members. And I think that what makes it very hard is when I introduced the mind-body problem, I introduced a mother and a daughter. And one of the grievances the daughter had with her mother is that her mother, no matter what happened in life, her mom would go into denial mode. She would go into denial mode and she would make everybody's life harder because she just couldn't face reality. And in a way, dementia was new, but in some ways it presented something that has always been. Here's another hurdle. What does her mom do? She denies, denies, denies. And it's very hard for her daughter to see this as a workings of a impaired brain, rather than the willful mind that she has known all her life, who just can't see reality for what it is. And so we're not just losing people who've had tremendous competence in the past, we're also dealing with a lot of the psychological baggage and dynamics that are brought up. They also can't help but hold that mind accountable. And that's where a lot of the screamings and the anger comes from. Because once you're in that living room and once you're sitting eating with your mom and she talks to you the way that she always talks to you, I think another misconception is that once you have this disease, all of a sudden, you know, there's only loss. But I think what really drives caregivers crazy is that just because you have dementia does not mean that you're not sophisticated, does not mean that you're not capable. And if you're a parent, does not mean where you don't know how to get your child just where it hurts, push that exact button. And then how can all of us in good faith say, no, 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 treat that mother who knows just the button to choose, treat that as a damaged, innocent brain. Of course not. You're going to see her as a mind that's been torturing you the way that she's always tortured you. And that's how these big philosophical ideas kind of enter these daily realities and drive us crazy, that we're really not designed to see other minds as brains.
We've got more in just a moment with clinical psychologist Dasha Kipper. It's The Take.
Carnegie Hall has welcomed a dizzying array of performers.
To have Andy Kaufman, Frank Zappa, and Birgit Nielsen and Horowitz on the same stage, it becomes this kaleidoscope of our history.
I'm Jessica Vosk. Join me for the new podcast, If This Hall Could Talk. It's all about our unique cultural history, as witnessed by one of New York's most beloved institutions, Carnegie Hall. Listen now, wherever you get podcasts.
Away. We're back, and we're still with Dasha Kipper, clinical psychologist and author of Travelers to Unimaginable Lands, Stories of Dementia, the Caregiver and the Human Brain. In the book, Dasha writes about the ways caregivers can find themselves falling back into old patterns with their loved ones who are living with dementia. And it can lead to emotional whiplash by undermining our own experiences of identity and the mind.
What I love to do is I love to look at these big philosophical questions. What is free will? What is identity, right? Philosophers have been going back and forth. But what I find very interesting, and increasingly this is a subject and philosophy of mind, is what do ordinary people think identity is? What are intuitions about identity? And what's interesting about that is dementia has a way of undermining those intuitions. So I speak of a woman whose husband thinks that she is an imposter. And that husband, after a certain time has gone by in their evening, like clockwork, looks at her like she's a total stranger and says, now you've got to leave. And in the early stages of that disease, she understood, of course, that her husband had a disease. How could she not? This delusion is screaming at you that says, my husband is not the same. But for the longest time, she would say, no, honey, we are married. And she would get into these arguments with him. And the reason that she could not stop arguing with him is because even though she understood that something was happening to his identity, and we talk about Alzheimer's as a loss of identity, but the truth is it's not that simple. The thing that actually tortured her, and I think part of the reason that she was getting into all these arguments, is that one minute he was the man who was throwing her out of the house. Another minute, he had enough wherewithal to make her a video for Valentine's Day or her birthday, I forgot which one, that told her how much she means to him, how he couldn't live without her. Philosophers could ask, who's the real man? Is it the mean husband who throws her out? Is it the sweet husband? Another intuition that Paul Bloom talks about that we have is, regardless of what's happening, human beings have a way of looking at other people and seeing them as essential, seeing them as true selves. And so when Elizabeth is arguing with her husband, it's not out of meanness. It is out of desperation. She's trying to, she's almost trying to access that true Mitch that she was married to, the Mitch that she could laugh and joke with. And if her husband was just paranoid all the time, it would be much easier for her to deal with this disease. But it is this constant ambiguity that keeps her hooked, that keeps her wanting to resolve this and really access that true deep down self. And it goes back to the idea of dualism, that we just can't imagine that all our loved ones are these sick brains. No, somewhere her husband has to live, the one that she's known, and somehow rescue her from all this.
Especially if he had, in fact, been a rescuer in their relationship before that, if he was a person who stepped in when bad things happened and helped to make things better.
Absolutely. And conversely, I speak of a mother who was extremely undermining to her son. And he would argue and argue, and everybody would say, why are you arguing? It makes no sense. She's sick. He would start blaming her for everything. And my heart went out to him, because the thing is that he was arguing because he was hoping that somehow he would reach out to this inner mom, the mom that he hoped would be his, and finally allow her to see him. And the minute that we kind of give up on them, do we give up on the idea that they're really ours, that a connection is there? And again, our brain's imperative is not to be reasonable. And all this advice that caregivers are given, it's very reasonable. You know, don't take things personally. It's the brain, not the mind. It's they're not themselves anymore. That's all very reasonable. But our minds are not designed to be reasonable. They're designed to desperately hold on to connection. And even if it's a connection that was never there, like in very fraught relationships, it's a connection you're still yearning for. And who are we to tell them when to stop fighting?
Given how reasonable and yet impossible the advice that caregivers get is, do you have advice?
I spent so much time being so protective of caregivers. I say that even though I can't change their circumstance, I can't make this disease less painful for them, I can't make this disease less maddening for them, but I think that by validating the difficulty, I think that we're very uncomfortable around pain. And the way that I tell people the antidote for this is other human connection, because that is our brain's purpose. And so you are losing the connection with your mom, you're losing the connection with your husband, you feel like you're losing your mind. How do we restore that? Go to therapy, go to groups, be with other human beings, engage in meaningful activities. And that's what I think self-care is. And of course, we tend to think about it as indulgent self-care. But what I mean by it is, do things that restore your brain sanity. Because being around people who have dementia, it is constantly exercising self-control, because dementia is making our brain do something we're not designed to do. And after a while, you're going to hit a wall, no matter how strong you are. So go to other people, connect with them, and that will actually fill you up to be able to be more patient to your loved ones. Get nourished. Get your mind nourished. Get your social needs met outside of the home, so that when you come back, you're not depleted and you could be better to yourself. And when you're better to yourself, you're better to your loved one. And that's true of dementia or no dementia.
Dasha Kipper, thank you so much for joining us here on The Takeaway.
Thank you so much for having me.